Yeah, a lot of good stuff happened over the weekend. A lot of crazy stuff when it comes to the NCAA baseball tournament. We'll touch on that in just a little bit. But how about somebody that sort of just casually came up at the end of a nice little portion of the Bull Speed Ahead show with Michael Kelly? Of course, he spoke to baseball head coach Billy Moll, but also track coach Eric Jenkins. And he was running down, you know, his staff and how important the guys are, from Damon Griffiths, the distance running coach, to Romero Henry, the entire staff. And then, by the way, we've got a pretty decent volunteer on our staff as well.
And then Coach Lawrence, our volunteer throws coach, who's one of the better throwers in the world right now and hit the A standard for the Olympics a while back. And so, you know, when we're talking to people, we're saying, hey, you've got good people around you here if you want to be good. It's up to you to choose this outstanding institution that we're trying to give an opportunity to get education from, and then just try to be a part of a consistent change in a positive way. So, got a good staff. They're doing a really, really good job, and I expect them to continue doing that. And we want to bring in young people who are excited about the University of South Florida and who want to go out and help us establish this program as one of the premier programs in the country. It won't happen overnight, but we will do our best to put forward a sustainable product.
So, yeah, when he almost casually mentions having one of the best throwers in the world, we should probably give you a little bit more on that. Her name is Shade Lawrence. Not too long ago, she was the national champion. This was back in 2016, actually, at Kansas State. Then she was third in the country at Colorado State her senior year, 2019. And now she is an Olympian. Actually, for the second time, she is an Olympian, as she qualified for her country in the last Olympics. And it's happened again. She was actually second for Team Jamaica as far as the finals went over the weekend at the National Stadium in her area of specialty, the discus. If you head to GoUSFBulls.com, they have a pretty good article about how not just for the United States national team, which a lot of the better performers for USF were able to at least compete in the Olympic trials, if not have major goals of actually making the Olympics, still awesome that they're able to do it. And yeah, a half dozen or so Bulls, not for the United States, but for other countries, able to participate. And Shade Lawrence, indeed, is going to the Olympics for Team Jamaica. Janisa Hextall, who is so great, in addition to the track and field team as a transfer this year, competed Friday in the 400-meter hurdles for the United States. So just awesome experiences. If you didn't hear all of Eric Jenkins, we're still replaying that episode of Bull Speed Ahead plenty of times for you. You can always check it out on the Unlimited Unloaded page, where we unload the shows, and if you missed it, added some stuff from Michael Kelly that didn't run on the stream, including his comments about the whole situation with men's basketball. As you know, they've had some changes they've undergone, and among those, new players and Russ Wood, who does a great job covering basketball. You can follow him at Russ Hoops. Did a pretty extensive breakdown of what he thinks the Bulls starting lineup is going to look like, and of course, he frames it as could, because there's so many questions, right? But Caleb Murphy, one of the few returning players, but a big one, gets pegged as the starting point guard, which makes a lot of sense. But also, incoming freshman Trey Moss, he is a pretty exciting player. Could be the, well, backup point guard, but also get plenty of minutes. Shooting guard, he goes with Javon Green, and I think people are going to love him. Played for George Mason. Again, good three-point shooter, very efficient with the ball. Big-time defender. I like how Russ says Green should bring a level of efficiency to the USF backcourt that USF fans have not seen in years. Before we get back to the starting lineup projections, I think it's interesting that Russ mentions that Justin Brown, David Collins, and Alexis Yetna were all expected to depart regardless of anything. And again, the others that have also moved on to Division I programs, Xavier Castaneda and Michael Durr, also gone are Madut Nakech, Rashawn Williams, and Luke Anderson, who originally was going to a school in Idaho, but now is going back to his home. If you missed that late last week, I noted via Twitter that Luke was headed to Florida Southern College. I always will root for him because, hey, that's my alma mater, Florida Southern, if you didn't know it. But back to the newcomers on the Bulls and where they might slot in. Sorrell Smith, if he is eligible. He is the kid, of course, originally from St. Pete High. Could be a shooting guard for sure. Small forward, yeah, Jameer Chaplin. Let's not forget about his production last season. I like how Russ goes with the what these guys would have averaged had they played 40 minutes, and his would have been 12 points and 7.5 rebounds. DJ Patrick, who is the lone junior college transfer, is a guy that could play at the three. Jake Boggs, a shooter transfer from East Tennessee State. Sam Hines Jr., Corey Walker Jr. Walker is the power forward that played at Tennessee. Speaking of SEC guys, South Carolina, Jalen McCreary. Big dude who, again, his 40 minutes per game average would have been 15 points and 7.5 rebounds. Slots in as the possible starter at power forward. Then it'll be interesting. The other returner, Russell Chiwa, couldn't be the starting center, but remember the name Byron Matos, who played for New Mexico at the five. A lot of new players. They are working out. We will attempt to get some of the new guys. There are many to get to on the program, along with Brian Gregory at some point, but thought that was an interesting article. As I did the article posted on the Daily Stampede website. Of course, they cover the guys daily, and it was their best. And yes, on the other side, not so best of the season. Men's basketball was the consensus most disappointing team, and I think everybody involved with it would certainly agree with that. But there's a lot of recalling the women's basketball performance, especially the fact that they won their first conference championship. Not to mention against UCF, if you missed that action or you want to hear it again, oh yeah, we're replaying the heck out of that on Bulls Unlimited 2. A couple nods to women's soccer, again, conference championship double, meaning the regular season title, that's the win against Memphis that you hear get replayed, and then the 4-0 conference tournament win against Cincinnati. It is kind of an interesting question. Who is the most impressive or what was the best team? As far as the whole story goes, baseball has the most recent memory, but women's basketball certainly. It was a tight contest, put it that way. But one sport that did not get mentioned at all, and it was a good panel of a half dozen, and you could tell they have the USF knowledge, but no one mentioned volleyball, and I want to correct that here because I thought what Jolene Shepherdson's team did is worth remembering, I think, because they were actually one of the earliest teams to see their season come to an end. It was just a very shortened season. I'm looking so forward to a full volleyball season. Schedule announcement could be coming up soon because they are going to begin play in August. But she brought in some tremendous talent led by the setter, Masha Ijeloff, the transfer, but also other Europeans. Their leading hitter ended up being Marta Svitkovic. Also great to see someone who'd been injured last year, Michaela Washington. You could tell, you know, I follow some of the players' social media accounts, and they're hanging out during the summer. They were actually hanging out in Allie Barnhart's home state of Kansas. I saw Jack St. Sin, of course, the St. Pete girl. I thought that was kind of neat. So you can tell they're really friends, not just a talented volleyball team. And boy, did they really come close to making the conference tournament. If you go back to how the season started, they took a five-setter against Temple and then lost a heartbreaking third set the next day, 28-26, lost that match. If they had won that second match against Temple, they could have easily been in the Owls spot, and Temple ended up making the conference tournament and going all the way to the final and challenging UCF. So yeah, remember the volleyball team. In fact, here's a little bit of an excitable announcer. The February 12th match against Temple where the Bulls were down 2-1, lost the third set 25-6. I mean, it was as dominant as it gets, but then took the fourth 26-24. All they had to do was fend off a couple of match points there, by the way. And then winning in the fifth 17-15, it was probably one of the better matches, most exciting matches of the year that, yeah, some people forgot about.
Serving down 24-23. It's Alexis Williams. First match of the conference schedule for both squads. Serve goes long, but fielded by the Owls. They're going to go left side. Ball like Masha dug up by Marta. Masha going to go left side to Plata. She puts it down! What a big moment there, because I couldn't help with ball like Masha in midair. Think that had a match-ending look to it, but I think it got deflected at the net enough. And we're tied at 24. Three match points saved. Williams with another good serve, but a perfect setup. They go middle, but it's blocked at the net by Michaela. Masha's going to get a good look here. They're going to go left side to Plata, and it's down for the Bulls. 25-24. So twice now. That was Davenport. The Owls had a really good look, but the Bulls get it back, and now they have a set point. Four in a row. Alexis Williams, good deep serve. Papalastu, it's not going to lead to much of a chance here for the Owls. They get it back. Marta to Masha. Michaela calls for it. Slide step, and it's a kill and a set victory. What a comeback for the Bulls. Down three match points. They win the fourth set, 26-24. We got a fifth set coming your way. Masha to serve. Third chance for the Bulls to put it away. Not a bad serve. The Owls will get a look right side. They go, and it's blocked down. Point stays alive, though. Bulls thought they had it. There's a tip shot, and the Owls dug up by Masha. CeCe over to the left side. Marta, another chance to win it, and it's in! The ball hit the tape and drifted and landed right on the right side inbounds, and the Bulls get the win.
Those were fun to call, and that was with a limited crowd. It's going to be full attendance this year. I know we had comments from Michael Kelly on let's everybody get on board with the Stampede. He was referring mostly to football, but all the sports, when we can get full capacity, are going to be fun to watch. Well, we saw full capacity and heard it with the baseball team in Texas, and the Longhorns almost did it. They had to beat Mississippi State twice in order to get to the championship series of the College World Series. And it went down to the final inning on Saturday night. They lost to Mississippi State. But, wow, what drama. And, unfortunately, different kind of drama on the other side of the bracket. If you missed this, NC State, which had an amazing run, they started off their conference season 1-9. They were pretty much an afterthought the whole way through. But they kept on performing. They got through the tournament. They were able to make it to the College World Series by, you know, going to the number one seed's home building, Fayetteville, Arkansas, knocking out the Razorbacks in a thrilling three-game series. And looked like they were doing the same thing. They beat Vanderbilt in the opener, and they had two chances to beat them. But what happened on Friday afternoon was just wild. I would encourage you, in fact, it's the last story that I put out on Twitter on Sunday. Kendall Rogers of D1 Baseball, who covers the sport like nobody else, went through the entire timeline. And it was funny because I've been watching soccer a lot with the European Championship, so I had the volume down. I was watching the NC State Vanderbilt baseball team at the same time, but no volume. And all I could tell was it didn't seem like they had much of a bench. Well, the reason is they had four players test positive, and they had to, after some thought of not having the game, they chose to, instead of forfeiting it against Vanderbilt on Friday, play with a very, very limited roster. Their pitcher, who hadn't hit all year, played first base and got two hits off of Kumar Rocker. They had three players in their starting lineup who had not gotten an RBI all year. They only had 13 players, so kind of a slim bullpen, and they still managed to almost beat Vanderbilt. The strange thing is that with all the tests that had to go on, they actually had some players test negative that were big members of their lineup that could have played but just didn't get back to the stadium in time. And as you probably heard, it happened at 1:30 in the morning on Saturday. It was determined by the NCAA that NC State could not play that next game against Vanderbilt. I would highly urge you to go to that story posted by D1Baseball.com. Vanderbilt even had great sympathy for its would-be one-more-game opponent. But instead, it will be Vanderbilt against Mississippi State in a best-of-three championship game for the College World Series that begins tonight in Omaha. Of course, Texas ends up being the de facto third-place team. So that's the team that knocked out the Bulls. You always want the team that beat you to end up winning the title, but Texas showed that it was right there. Just couldn't quite finish it off. There's so many that I'm going to wait until Wednesday's show. I tried to get it done for today, but there's so many Bulls, current baseball members, playing in summer league ball. Saw Daniel Cantu had a walk-off hit. Then I want to make sure I don't want to leave anybody out, so we are going to work on that for Wednesday's program. Mention a couple of future Bulls that we can tell you officially are in the fold. One is a pitcher from Jesuit, a lefty by the name of Joey Vellini. Another is from Maryland, coming off of Tommy John surgery, by the name of Jake Pfeffer. And we can also tell you that softball has added Antoinette Hill, who is from up north, originally signed with Purdue, but will be joining the Bulls pitching staff. Another former Bull, we can say good luck to her, Angelie Rodriguez of women's basketball, announced she is signing with George Mason. And we end up with great stuff here. How about Run Upreyong? I said an unsung member of the men's golf team, alluding to that Daily Stampede Best Of article. Albin Bergstrom got a lot of mention, deservedly so, for being the best male student athlete of the year. Georgina Corrick on the women's side seemed to be the unanimous choice. Yeah, when you think about the men's golf team of Steve Bradley, you think about Albin Bergstrom first, and then probably Luke Gifford second, and maybe Sam Nicholson third, but Run Upreyong was in the running for the championship this weekend, the 104th amateur championship, talking about the state of Florida. This was in Streamsong, basically that whole Polk Highlands area near Bowling Green. And he was actually tied for the lead, and this is a huge field and obviously a huge event. Going into the final round, he ends up in second place by just one shot to the winner of the event, Fred Biondi. But Run shot a 7-under par third round, 65 on Saturday, had a par final total. Actually, Biondi just bested him by one shot in the final round. And then there was a three-shot drop-off to third place. Oh, by the way, Sam Nicholson of the Bulls finished tied for seventh himself at 6-under par. But Run was 12-under. That is fantastic. And the experience gained, I'm sure, can only benefit the Bulls. We will definitely endeavor to speak to Run on the show here soon. And I mentioned Sam Nicholson finishing in the top 10. How about another incoming Bull also making the cut? And we're talking about a pretty big field. This thing ended up with 168 competitors. And so to make the cut, you ended up having to finish top 72. Chase Gullickson ended up tied for 63rd, but again made the cut with a 4-over par first round and a 1-over par. He is an incoming freshman from Bishop Moore in Orlando. He won the Florida Boys Junior Championship a couple of years ago, was fifth at the 2020 2A State Championship. So Coach Bradley actually mentioned this was back when they announced he had signed with the team, talking about Chase Gullickson, that he could be the next Kyle Flexenhar from the Orlando area. Although Kyle's righty and Chase is a lefty, they have similar styles of game and similar demeanor. So that's a nice comparison. And again, reasons to be pretty enthusiastic about men's golf. One of the players you'd almost call a depth player on the team, coming in second at a major amateur event over the weekend. That's going to do it for Bulls Beat on a Monday. Thanks for listening. I'm Derek Sharp.